తమస్సు మా జ్యోతిర్గమయ మృత్యుర్మామృతం గమయ ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. లీడర్స్ ఫ్రమ్ ది అన్రియల్ టు ది రియల్, from darkness of ignorance to light of knowledge, and from this limited existence to the infinite true existence. Om peace, peace, peace. So friends, we were studying in this series, in this summer series, on the celebrated book Prophet by Khalil Gibran. It is, although in size a small book, it has great wealth, tremendous richness. And therefore, although initially I thought that we will be able to easily complete this book in 7 lectures in the summer, it seems no, we will not be able to do that. We may be able to just study that too superficially, cursorily, a few lectures, or I mean the few of these chapters. So we saw last time that the prophet, his ship has come to take him back to his land of origin, his true abode. He has come to us, come to this world of transmigratory, illusory existence, where everything is just cut in pieces. Everything is full of strife and desires and restlessness. To this world he has come with the message of peace and true love and fulfilling the real purpose of life, and thus becoming blissful and perfect. So he lived for 12 years. Now the time has come to go back. But before going back, he just was waiting for a moment to say goodbye, when people just rushed to stop him from going. They started urging him, "Well, you can't leave us. Please don't do that. Your life is intricately woven in our life. So therefore, please, please don't go. Don't give such a blow to us." But a wise amongst them, Almitra, so she says, "Well, you have to go. There are pangs of separation, we understand. But then still you have to go. That also I can see. Nothing can stop you. But before you go, tell us a few things of wisdom. And those things then will illumine our lives." So that is how this tale begins. And he said, "Okay, what is it that you want to know? And Almitra said, tell us about love. And then we saw that what is love? It is, we all know, very common feeling in us, love. We all love. And we want to love. Whenever there is love, we feel the joy associated with it. Whenever we see something against it, we don't like it. It is, love is something that we feel, we know. What do you mean that we don't know love? We know love for sure. But do we really know? If we examine, we see that we really do not know love. We imagine we love, know, but we do not know. That is why this question is asked, that tell us about love. This request is made, tell us about love. And let us read the answer. And with a great voice, this prophet Al-Mustafa said, when love beckons to you, follow him. Though his ways are hard and steep, and when his wings enfold you, yield to him. Though the sword hidden among his pinions may wound you, and when he speak to you, believe in him. Though his voice may shatter your dreams as the north wind lays waste the garden. This is an imagery of north winds, is used in many poems, including you will see that in the Canticle of the Soul, Spiritual Canticle of Soul, of Saint John of the Cross, you will see the same analogy used, the north winds. In many such ancient lore, you will find this idea that north winds, they are cold, very destructive and very bothersome. They, when the north winds blow, the crops are all destroyed because of the terrible cold. So that is what the love may do to all our ideas, our personality. And therefore, he says, it crowns you, so shall it crucify you too. That is the basic idea that we see in love. Love is based on this underlying idea of oneness, and therefore our little individualities get crushed when the love comes. Love feels this oneness, and therefore when as we go towards that oneness, then our individualities, they start getting shattering blows. And yet it is necessary. It is, we resist it. And thus what happens, because of our this imbecile clinging to our so-called individualities, we hold on to names and forms. That which keep on changing, we try to hold on to them. Thus what happens is, only the names are changed. Only the names are changed, and the things, they remain the same. They remain you know, without any love, without actually the feeling of oneness. So therefore the name love sticks, but what happens in the name of love? Well, I want this, I want that. In the name of love we start demanding. The demands arise. The love is then, it is conditional, that I love only if this is there, not otherwise. I will love only if you behave like this. It is a constant thing, friends, that those who love each other also seem to hate each other. Why? It is usually the adults, they have learned to cover their emotions. But even in adults it happens. The children very frankly give out that at one moment they are loving their mother, at another moment they hate the same mother. If they do not get the ice cream that they were looking from, the mother says, no, no, you had too much already. No, no ice cream for you now. Then the child says, well, the mother, lot of hatred comes up there. So therefore, is it the name of love has remained there? But actually there is very little love than this imbecile clinging to individual desires, which again keep on shifting here and there. What you like in the morning, you don't like in the afternoon, and something else you like in the evening. So therefore, there is no real love that depends on the underlying oneness. So love, we have to understand what the love does. So he says, for even as love crowns you, shall he crucify you. Even as he is for your growth, so is he for your pruning. Even as he ascends to your height and caresses your tenderest branches that quiver in the sun, so shall he descend to your roots and shake them in their clinging to earth. Like sheaves of corn, he gathers you unto himself. He threshes you to make you naked. He sifts you to free you from your husks. He grinds you to whiteness. He kneads you until you are pliant. And then he assigns you to his sacred fire, that you may become sacred bread for God's sacred feast. This is what love will do to us. Let us not expect that with love then everything will be so nice for me, so beautiful for me, and I will always get whatever I ask of my beloved. I will thus be able to gratify my desires and so forth. But this is not going to happen. It is all, in fact, the opposite of what you thought that the love will give you. The love will not give you those things if you are seeking those. But if you seek only love's peace and pleasure, then it is better for you to cover your nakedness and pass out of the love's threshing floor. Not that you will not be threshed. The world will thresh you without love. It is, the question is, what do we want? The threshing by love, so that our essence comes out, or the threshing of this world of threshing by this world of just passing glory, the world of multiplicity, it is going to thresh us too. See, those who follow love, they suffer. As if those who don't follow love, they don't suffer. Suffering is common. Suffering for something right and ultimately blissful is one thing. Suffering, just suffering and suffering and suffering, that is another thing. It is, if you want to go on the right path, well, you do burn fuel. If you want to drive on the right path, does it mean that your vehicle will run just on air when you are driving on the wrong track? There also you will burn the fuel. It is, the wrong path looks very attractive. That is why Jesus said that many go by that. In the Sermon on the Mount, that beautiful sentence comes. Jesus was a great teacher of love. It is, so he says, what will happen? You see, many are going by that path. It leads to destruction. Narrow is the path. Few are going. That will lead to ultimate salvation. So get ready to be threshed. Just get ready that all our little desires will get crushed in this mighty blow of love. When this tempest of love blows, our little egos, they try to rebel against this crushing. But, well, ultimately you are going to be crushed. If you don't want, as he says here, that then better for you to cover your nakedness. That shame of being one comes to you. That is the allegory in the biblical Genesis that you read, that there was no shame in the beginning. When that shame came, the feeling of separateness, and then you cover your truth, your true nature is then put under a covering, and thus you are not then, you try to just keep your so-called separateness. And yet the underlying love is calling you all the time. So that is how we devise the devious ways of keeping the name love. The label is love. What goes underneath is very different. Here in our kitchen, there was a label on the bottle that it is sugar. Now somebody had to fill salt in some other place, could not find the right bottle, and so took the empty sugar bottle and put salt in it. And thought that I will change the label at the right time. But then forgot about it. Now somebody wanted sugar in the tea. Now, that is what happens. You know, in our level of love remains. And we put all individual desires and cravings and all that in that level of love. And so we have to remember, friends, that love will do all this to us. That, and where this you pass out of love's threshing floor into this seasonless world, where you shall laugh, but not all your laughter, and weep, but not all your tears. This is what happens when you leave that threshing floor, where you are going to be threshed, but your real true nature will come out through that threshing. You want to avoid being threshed. And so we, in that avoidance, run away from the threshing floor. Thus will not get seemingly threshed by this, but what will happen? This will be our condition, that state of ignorance and darkness will be there. Love gives not but itself, and takes not but from itself. Love possesses not, nor would it be possessed, for love is sufficient unto love. And then he goes to say further that love is sufficient to itself. There is nothing else required. It is very similar to an aphorism on devotion by the great sage Narada. His aphorisms on devotion are really great guide to life. And he mentions there that we will, of course, study one more verse of him, one more aphorism of him. But he says there that love is sufficient to itself. It is, you don't require anything else. For example, you practice something to get something else. There is the separation of means and end. But love is its own end. You love not to get something from it, but that itself is sufficient reward. You don't need anything out of love. Like we crave for money, and not for money itself, but then the money gets used to buy something. So we require money for that something. If we get that something without money, then I don't need money. I get all that I need without money. So money becomes redundant. So everything that we are having or go for, I want food. Well, for what? I feel hungry. To satiate my hunger, I need food. But suppose you have no hunger, then you don't need food. If you are surviving, if you are energetic, without having to fill your body with something, then you don't need food. It is like that. That all other things are needed for something else. But love is its own reward. It does not, swayam phalarupata, that is what Narada says. Swayam phalarupata, it is its own reward. So, he says thus, and when you love, you should not say, this is a practice. When you love, you should not say, God is in my heart, but rather, I am in the heart of God. I am contained in God. The idea in this is, it is not wrong to say that God is in me if we are saying it without trying to hold on to ego. In both cases, this message is same. Crush out the ego. It is God, I am in God. So I have no separate existence. And all of us have existence in God. Like all waves have existence in ocean. So therefore, let us try to feel this idea, I am in God. Like they say about the great sages, that they lived, moved, and had their being in God. Nothing else was there. So this is the practice of presence of God. That yes, I am in God. God is doing everything. I am just an instrument. This is another way of feeling this practice, that I am in God. There is a beautiful song that we sing here many times, especially during our retreats and all that. It says that in whatever conditions I belong to God, I belong to God. That belonging cannot be severed at all. I belong to God. When we are connected with, say, a school, then as long as I am connected with that school, I say I belong to this particular school, that it is, yes, I study at Brown. I am a Brown student. But then afterwards you become an alumnus and so forth. It is, you don't belong there anymore. But we always belong to God. That belonging never goes away. Even if we want to run away, there is no possibility of running away from God. You can declare yourself, I am an atheist. Yeah, declare yourself. But still, you cannot get away from the truth that you belong to God. Your declaring doesn't matter. It is like if you are sitting in a train that is going, say, to New York. And then inside the train, even if you are running in the opposite direction, it doesn't matter really. You are still going to where the train is going. You are running in the opposite direction does not matter at all. So our saying that I don't care for God, still you are in God. It is one this one saintly person was telling me. I had a conversation with him. So he said, I tell those who say that we don't believe in God, and he said, I tell them that even for saying this, you are using the word God. That we don't belong, that I am not a believer in God. Whether you believe or you don't believe, you are in God. No escaping this truth at all. I am not in this world. Where are you going to go? You are in this world. Another Marathi sage gives this analogy. His great his name is Jnaneshwar. So Jnaneshwar says that if an ornament made of gold, can it run away from gold? No, it has no possibility of running away from gold. It may Say if it is a necklace, then it can run away from one neck to another neck, or can go some nice box or somewhere like that, in a case. But it is, can it run away from gold? It has no way of running away from gold. It is thus, you see, it is, God is our basic underlying reality. My predecessor Swami Sarvagatananji used to therefore say, what is God? God is G-O-D, ground of our dwelling. It is ground of our dwelling. That is, therefore, let us just saying that I am in God, I am in God's heart, is just saying the truth, just holding on to that which is fact. It is therefore, let us learn that to develop this feeling of oneness with everything, and that is the essence of love. You do not need any separateness then. We see the underlying unity. I give a very nice example. When we see that unity, there is the conflict is gone, the quarrels are gone, hatred is gone. Do you ever think that your left hand becomes jealous of your right hand? It is not possible, you know. I in my left hand, same I in right hand. It doesn't, even if you are, say, holding money in your right hand, the left hand doesn't feel, why this right hand is, I should get money, there should be equal division, you know, right hand some money, left hand some money. No, there is no such feeling at all. The hands do not say that we will not cooperate with mouth. We work and this mouth gets all to eat, we will not feed the mouth. It never can be imagined, because there is this a great experience of oneness there. And so when we feel this, then that we belong to God, we will be marching towards that oneness. So and another important thing that he mentions here, love has no other desire but to fulfill itself. But if you love and must needs have desires, what is a desire? It is the opposite of the nature of love. Desire demands, want to get, and love is opposite, wants to give. So therefore love does not have a desire at all. If you like, I always recommend that Swami Vivekananda's little book, Bhakti Yoga, has a chapter. The title of the chapter is Triangle of Love. So, and it shows in that chapter illustrates how what in the world is passed for love is really not love. If you just compare the characteristics of love with characteristics of what we call as love, we all agree on these characteristics of love, like love gives, love has no bargaining, and so forth. And just compare to what we call love. It is, therefore it is important to see that love has no desires. But yet, we cannot quickly agreed to give up desires. So we may feel a little morose. So no desire. In Vedanta also, it is, this idea is told, because it, in many scriptures you see this is emphasized. Give up all your desires, and then Vishwanath starts feeling morose. Oh, I have to give up this, I have to give up this desire. Oh, how can it be? So therefore, to encourage them, it is told, no, what I mean is, go to your real desire, you know, that which is your real desire. Those things which you desire for a little while and then throw, that was not your real desire at all. Otherwise you would have been, holding on to it. But that doesn't happen. It is, you catch your little playthings, you love them for a little time and then throw away. The kids, they when little children, they go to the seashore, they build all those sand castles, nice palaces, and then fight with each other over whose is better and whose is not. And then as the evening is approaching, the parents say, hey, come on, we have to go now. And they themselves kick those. It is after all just the sand. So it is, that is the nature of our desires. They are not our true desires. So cherish the true desire. And what is that true desire? In one word it can be said, that to find your true nature. To find who you are, and that is the true desire. Hold on to it. That is real desire. Instead of the illusory desires, go to the real desire. So, and to make you go to the real desire, well, stop the other desires. Have the desire to stop other desires. That is what he mentions here. But if you love and must needs have desires, let these be your desires. To melt and be like a running brook that sings its melody to the night. To know the pain of too much tenderness. To be wounded by your own understanding of love. And to bleed willingly and joyfully, to wake at a dawn with a winged heart and give thanks for another day of loving. So, to rest at the noon hour and meditate love's ecstasy, to return home at eventide with gratitude, and then to sleep with a prayer for the beloved in your heart and song of praise upon your lips. So this is a practice. Lead a life of that. That will calm down all other desires that take us away from our real love. And thus we will march to that desirelessness, where if we see oneness, where is the question of desire? It is, I feel, oh, that gown looks so beautiful, so pretty, I must have it. My appreciation of gown vanishes as soon as I get the desire to possess it. Then I start bargaining. How much does it cost? It is. But if I just see, That is gone, that is already mine. It is instead of a closet in my little house, it is kept here, that's all. It is that idea of oneness takes away the idea of being covetous. It is everything is yours. It is on somebody that some other body than this body, but all bodies are my bodies. See, it is like that. It actually becomes like that. See how much joy that springs up from this. So this is this divine love, bhakti. Entertains no desires. This is a quote from again another aphorism by Narada, that for it is of the nature of suppression of desires. It suppresses the desires. And it is, so this is another test whether our love is really love or not. If it is giving rise to different desires, then it is not love. It is, if it is springing up the desire that, well, my beloved should do this for me, should buy a jewelry for me, then it is not love. It is, one should remember this, that, and if we understand this, our love will really take the right course and it will expand. Otherwise, it will be always a game. In the name of love, it will be all, commerce going on. So, bargaining and so forth goes on. So therefore, this idea is there, that a practice of love is practice of oneness. It is the practice of giving all other desires except becoming merged completely without any murmur, without keeping any separateness. This is what happens. One beautiful picture that is given in Vedanta, in Upanishads, that imagine all of us are like rivers, you know, and marching. Rivers, they all march towards ocean. In with straight or crooked ways, and that infinite ocean is our destination. It is, and what happens as we get into ocean, our separateness is gone. Our individuality is just crushed. It was really not individuality at all. It was getting divided all the time. Yet the name that was given was, well, individuality. There is really no individuality in that. So this is what Narada gives as a practical way. Whenever a desire to possess something comes, then do not give way to it. This word suppression is decreed by this modern psychologist because suppression creates all those reactions, complexes. Well, it is true that suppression creates complexes, but giving way to suppression creates worse complexes. Giving way to your desires will create more complexes than suppressing them. It is not only our individual life, but even our social life, family life, everything will get shattered if we do not learn to suppress some desires and then give vent to the other desires. It is like this, you know, how our boiler can be used to provide heat to the place. If it has all these different holes, then the steam will just get out of those. There will be no power available to heat the space. So we have to plug all those holes. That is suppression. It is our desires which are just spending away our energies. They have to be stopped, blocked. It is frittering away of our potential. So this is what Narada says here. And here it thus, with this, it concludes this chapter on love. And in next chapter, which is very connected with love, you see marriage. As soon as this idea of love comes, then there is this idea of marriage. So Alamitra asked, then Alamitra spoke again and said, "And what of marriage, Master? Tell us about marriage." "It is in love." Well, there is love, but let us then get connected, joined together. That is called then marriage. Two persons coming together, and then it is we feel now we are together, we are married, we are two but one. It is like the parts of a thing brought together, and then you feel that there is this love, and that has come to this condition of called that condition called marriage. Yes, but it is very important that we should see what it entails. If in marriage, what happens is that we try to bind each other, that well, she should do like this, why not? If she is my wife, then what is the otherwise the point of getting married? If she wants to behave as she will be, then it is no good. We have to be together. We should do things together. Why it is like this? Same thing, the wife feels that, why? If you wanted to do like this, why did you marry at all? It is, so it is this bondage that keeps on, you know. It is obstructing the flow of love and togetherness. It is, one friend of mine, he is a very good devotee. And if I ask you, well, can you come on that day? No, no, I have to go. Why you need to go there? Swami, he says in a grave voice, I am a married man. You do not know what a married man has to do. So it is, don't expect me to do all these things. It is like that, you see. It is, there are all these funny, one happened right here, you know, one lady and her husband, they were sitting and we were having a conversation, very good devotees, and then that wife was, that lady, very powerful, committed advocate of organic food. And she said that, and it is not pricey as such. Don't think that it costs a lot. It is, we should all take only organic food. And look at my husband. He is very careful about spending. He doesn't waste any penny. He is an economist. He wouldn't have allowed me had it been costing too much. And the husband was trying to, no, that is not. And then when he got a chance to put his word, he said, no, I did, I am very calculative and I don't want to spend much. What I saw is the spending on organic food is cheaper than spending on divorce. So, it is like that. So, the love there, we try to, impose. Our bondage on another person in the name of marriage. You must do like this. You must do like that. And thus, it is always impossible. So, therefore, he says there, we shall study this chapter in details in our next Tuesday class. But it says, love, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be moving sea between the shores of your souls. A very sublime, beautiful idea it is. So, we shall study it in our next Tuesday class. So, it is, let us conclude with the closing prayers. Coming Sunday, there is a music concert, an Indian lady, Indian classical music vocalist, Anita Kulkarni. She is coming from North Carolina and she will be giving this concert. So, those of you who are interested, please try to come. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat. Shri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.